This mini-lecture for English 206 Literary History focuses on two of the later Romantic poets. The previous lecture focused on Sir Walter Scott and Samuel Taylor Coleridge as two of the foundational Romantic poets writing about medieval topics. One thing that I should also mention about these poets is that despite Scott's antiquarian interests in the medieval, none of the poets either in this lecture or in the previous lecture knew about Beowulf. They did not know about Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. As far as they were concerned, most of the medieval literature they knew came out of Chaucer, came out of Percy's Relics, and a few other collections along those lines. So their understanding of the medieval literature tradition was significantly different from what we would understand. So how far have we come since the last lecture? Well, John Keats was born in 1795, that's 2 years before Coleridge started writing his medieval poetry. Carolyn Norton was born, Carolyn Sheridan, in 1808, the year that Marmion appeared for the first time, the poem that Lochinvar is taken from. So both of these writers come from later times. We could think of them as sharing a second generation, possibly even breaking them into a second and third generation of Romantic poets. But they aren't writing their works until years after Scott and Coleridge. In fact, the first year that Keats really becomes serious about becoming a professional poet, 1816, happens to be right around the time that Coleridge is starting to revisit works such as Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and also when he finally gets around to publishing Christabel. It's also around the time that Scott starts writing his novels, again, anonymously because he's a little embarrassed about it. Keats was originally trained as a surgeon. That may sound prestigious, but in that era, there were two classes of medical practitioners. There were physicians and there were surgeons. Physicians were trained in universities and they could make a great deal of money. They didn't necessarily, but many of them did. But generally, they made money by observing and prescribing, but often not touching the bodies of their patients, or at least not examining them too closely. Surgeons, on the other hand, tended to serve a lower class clientele and to be much more hands-on doctors. These weren't just people who were cutting into their patients, as the term surgeon might suggest, but they were the people who were taking care of, for instance, the tuberculosis patients on the east side of London. And in fact, that is exactly what Keats was doing when he himself contracted tuberculosis that would wind up killing him before the age of 30. He died in 1821 in Italy. But in that five-year period between when he decides he's going to be a poet and when he dies, Keats produces a remarkable body of literature that includes certainly many classically informed things. I mentioned last time his Ode on a Grecian Urn, one of his most famous works. He writes poems to nature, such as his Ode to Autumn and the Ode to the Nightingale. But he also is very interested in the Middle Ages. And in some ways, he's interested in Middle Ages for some of the same reasons as Scott and Coleridge. All of these writers are interested in the Middle Ages partly because of their distance from it, how unusual, how strange, how uncanny those times can seem to modern eyes and ears. And one thing that Keats is very interested in is trying to imagine how things like magic might not have been particularly real, but how they were an imagined, at least, or a psychological part of this world. So in something like La Belle Dame sans Merci, there does very much seem to be magic at work, but maybe it's just the magic that a woman has over a man who too easily falls in love. Maybe there is something that would count as a real spell there, but certainly there's something about the chemistry between La Belle Dame and the knight that suggests that he's also just interested in relationships. On the eve of St. Agnes, his interest in relationships continues. But one thing that also emerges here is that he's different from Coleridge. I mentioned last time Coleridge is very interested in exploring moral issues in his medieval poems. Keats is actually not all that interested in morality. What he's interested in is creating effects of beauty. What is it that beauty represents? What do you do with beauty? And in the case of the Eve of St. Agnes, that could very well be voyeurism, breaking into a young woman's room, possibly raping her. It's not entirely clear what's going on in the poem, but there is this sense of threat or invasion that's a part of that. And Keats doesn't seem at all ill at ease at that. He is just fascinated by the beauty of the woman and what that will lead the man who loves her or is attracted to her to do. So when we see what Keats is doing, on the one hand, the woman is the sexual threat that could destroy the man. On the other hand, the woman may become the sexual object. Keats doesn't seem to be winning too many feminist points with the way that he treats the women in these poems. This is something that we could think about. Why are writers interested in the Middle Ages? Are they interested in a very specific kind of gender politics, class politics, national politics? For instance, using La Belle Dame sans Merci, using a French title in the English language. Keats didn't know foreign languages very well. He had to read all of his Greek and Latin mythology in translation. He didn't have the college education that people like Coleridge and Scott did. So he's working from a very different cultural standpoint, but he seems to have something very much invested in reaching back to these earlier times. Now let's turn for a moment to Carolyn Norton, who is seen as something of a godmother to the British suffrage movement, the women's rights movement, carrying on the work of women like Mary Wollstonecraft from the generation before this. Mary Wollstonecraft, by the way, being the mother of Mary Shelley. So a number of these women wind up, if not quite crossing paths, at least moving in some of the same circles. Carolyn Norton, as I'd mentioned in class before, had a very difficult marriage. She had a violent husband who, when she left to escape being beaten, cut her off from her four sons, cut her off from monetary support so that she had to go to friends for money, as well as trying to sell her writings to support herself and possibly to create a home that she might be able to bring her sons into. That is, that crisis part of her life is still in the future in 1830 when she writes The Faithless Knight, but it's already something that's on the horizon. Her marriage is already going very, very badly at this point. And so thinking about why someone like Norton might want to turn to the Middle Ages gets us back to this issue of distance, gets us back to this issue of trying to imagine what gender roles are like. But one thing we might wonder here is, is she commenting on the fact that gender roles don't seem to have advanced very much? Modern society might not be all that modern. Or perhaps we need to get back to something before modernity that was a bit more valuable, these codes that women and men, maybe particularly men, used to be bound by. Today they are not bound by them. Whoever heard of a knight ignoring his lady love? As we'll see later on in the course, even Victorian stories of Lancelot, who is not always the most sympathetic character in medieval stories, because he helps to lead to the downfall of Camelot, after all. He is very careful to respect the attentions of women, even when he is not necessarily interested in a relationship with them. He has to treat them with courtesy. He has to treat them with respect and some sort of affection, even if that affection is mixed with distance. So in The Faithless Knight, there are some lines being crossed, and trying to figure out why Norton is pointing to these lines being crossed is where a lot of the interpretive play comes in with a poem like this. But one thing we have in looking at Keats and Norton together is two poets who are very much interested in what looking back to earlier periods might tell us about understanding how men and women are meant to relate to each other in the here and now.